Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is the Best Ever You Show, and I'm your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. And with me today, I have author Susie Boots. And you're more than an author, but I kind of like to go with the author thing for a minute here because this book is new. It's fresh off the press, hot off the press, actually. And it's called Through the Eyes of Truth. And I'm so thankful you're here with me today. Hello, Susie Boots.
Thanks. Oh, hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for having me here today. I'm so excited.
Yeah, you're kind of also one of my pageant idols. I got to admit, you're a former Mrs. International. That let's go there for a minute before we go to the book. That's hard to do, to win a national pageant.
Yes, it is. I always tell people, you can do everything you can to prepare, and at the end, it really is in God's hands, and I think that's exactly what happened. You've done pageantry as well, and it really just does come down to covering all the details that you can, and in the end, there's just, everyone has a plan and a path, and I was just very, very blessed to get to be Mrs. International in 2006. It was a wonderful journey that keeps on giving.
Yeah, and for those following who want to speak to Susie, you can give us a call at 714-868-0220. And then also you can follow along online on her website, which is susieboots.com or susieboots.blogspot.com. Pretty much everything you need to see, though, as far as the book and her jewelry line and her pageant coaching is at susieboots.com. So let's go tackle one more thing, and then we'll kind of go into each thing. Also, you're also a jewelry designer, which
I am.
That's really neat. Is this? I'm curious about that. Has that been something you've done for a long, long time or recent?
Had actually started designing clothes. My mom was very multi-talented, and when she was a fashion designer, a concert pianist, she wrote, she did everything. She was just amazing. And I got my bachelor's degree in fashion merchandising and design. And I was sewing for literally years and years and years. All the clothes that I competed in pageantry, I made my gowns, everything. And it wasn't until my mom passed away from breast cancer in 2004, where I sat down in front of the sewing machine, Elizabeth, and I literally could not remember how to sew. It was the strangest and most frightening feeling in the world, and I had gone to see a grief counselor, and she mentioned that I needed to start doing something different, something that my mom and I had never done together. So I was searching for a new hobby, and I went to Michael's, a craft store, and they had a two-hour jewelry making class for $15, and I signed up, and 3 weeks later, I did my first show because I absolutely fell in love with it. So it wasn't until probably 2005 or 2006 where I started.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear about your mom. That's
Thank you.
That's sad, yeah. I don't even want to think about losing my mom ever. It's just, how do you get through something like that? Do you have any words of wisdom? I asked you that specifically because I was thinking about you yesterday, and I was thinking about just Mother's Day, and I was wondering if you were sad or crying, or I wonder what that's like, because my husband has lost both of his parents, and I know yesterday was a real hard day for him. He always misses his mom. Are you okay?
And thank you for asking that, because it does get a little bit easier with time. But I have to admit, even to this day when I really just start talking about my mom, it does get difficult, because there's times where it feels like she's still there, that I still need to pick up the telephone. And I do that as I got done with the book and with the radio interview. I was just very excited. And it's things like that that you plan it every single life that you don't get to have anymore.
Yeah.
So the best advice I give, I always give this to teenagers, it's like, I know it's a struggle now sometimes, but your mother is one of the greatest gifts you'll ever receive. And Mother's Day is hard, but honestly, with time, it really does help. It's still difficult, but it helps.
Yeah. And your book, Through the Eyes of Truth, I have a question about this too. Did you start writing this a really long time ago, or is this a recent thing too?
I started writing this book about a year ago, and it's interesting because I always people that I wanted to write a book. I wanted to be a writer since I was in the third grade. And I was not the greatest in math, but I always somehow managed to excel in writing. And I'll never forget my third grade teacher said, one of these days you're going to be an amazing writer. You just keep writing. And even though I was so young, it stuck. And I'm sure that those words helped to form my confidence in writing. But I started writing my book about a year and a half ago when I literally just sat down and just said a prayer because I was feeling, my life is very blessed. I mean, I can find a thousand reasons to be happy. You know me, I'm this eternal optimist and it makes people insane. But I was, you know, I have a wonderful life. I have a beautiful husband, great dog. You know, I'm coaching amazing contestants and something was missing. And I sat down in front of my computer and I just literally said a prayer. I'm like, Lord, I need to know what my truth is. I need to know what is missing. And I started typing and I kept typing until about 4 months ago when I finished the book. So that's literally how it started. I wish I could come up with a better story than that. But
No, it's a good story because this is a 379-page book. That's a lot of typing. For those people listening, you know, there are a lot of people listening who dream of writing a book, you know, seem to find every excuse in the world not to. I know a lot of people who are like, there's a book in me, it's dying to get out, but I haven't written it yet, you know, that kind of thing. How do you stay disciplined to write a book like this?
Well, and that's funny you ask because my husband makes fun of me, you know, saying that my attention span isn't the greatest in the world unless it's something I really love to do. I can sit down and talk to people, and when I coach, my full attention can be on you literally for 6 hours, and I'm rejuvenated and I'm excited. And I think it's the content of the book and how it was written that really helped me stay focused, because when I was writing it, I really felt good. I felt like I was connected to my own spirit and that I was doing something with a purpose, and it was answering a lot of my own questions, so I became a little bit more intrigued by what I was writing. But it's interesting because when you really do something that you love, it becomes a lot easier to stay focused on that. And that it took me a very long time to learn. But this book, it's funny because it's literally the opposite of what I used to be. I just could not concentrate on anything, and now, you know, a butterfly can fly across the room, and I don't get up and fall, but I stay focused.
I always say chicken. I get distracted. I go chicken. Oh, boy, that's hilarious. Of all the chapters of this book, you know, my husband and I were reading this weekend, and we kind of traded off chapters. I was trying to figure out which one's my favorite, and I can't, actually. So I was wondering if you could pick one that's your favorite chapter and just maybe talk about it a little bit, why you wrote it and what it's about and so forth. I sort of love the self-love one, but pick which one you love the most. I like the power of forgiveness too. But
it's interesting because as I was writing this book, a lot of thoughts were just, you know, coming out on paper. And I think that my most important chapter, the one that I felt most connected to, maybe it's because I had started it, was the power of prayer, the very first chapter. And the reason for that is because so many times in my life, I mean, I've always been a praying person, you know, I have to believe there's something greater than what we're looking at to get us through life and to believe in. And I would pray, and as soon as I got done praying, I would get up and, you know, walk into another room and kind of close off my doors and not listen for the answer. Or if my gut instinct told me I needed to do something to change my life or to make a little bit better, you know, that wasn't a responsibility I wanted to take. It was just so much easier to turn off the TV and negate that little intuition. And the power of prayer, that chapter really opened my eyes to the importance of prayer being a two-way street of listening and asking and literally just receiving. And just like you do in any form of communication, I think my biggest aha was just when I wrote that thinking, you know what, it's so true. I'll say a prayer, I'll speak something, and I'll kind of turn off that inner voice, and pretend it's not there, and they wonder why my prayer wasn't answered. So I do love a lot of, actually I love all the chapters of the book personally, but this one I think was the biggest eye-opener for me and helped me to really understand everything else that I wrote.
Yeah. Do you, just to clarify so people kind of understand, you're not saying to people, you have to go to church every second of the day, you must do this, you must do that, and you know, there's not some religious, you know, basis behind, you know, exactly what you have to do and structure.
Right.
You're more saying,
correct.
Yeah, and I like that about that. I didn't feel like I had some form of religion, you know, being thrown at me, but rather like a general spirituality. And you talk a little bit in the book about people maybe who have given up because their prayers aren't answered. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
You know, it's interesting because when I was younger, I did go to church to say this out of convenience. It was right across the street from where we lived. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a very spiritual person, but I have not been in church for a very, very long time. And I just said that out loud, but I pray every day, mm-hmm. and I'm very spiritual.
Need to confess as well. But
I still like to confess.
Exactly. Now we go to church, you know, often enough, but you know, I was raised Catholic and Presbyterian, alternating every week. One Catholic,
right.
I had one Presbyterian and one Catholic parent, and we went to church every other week at different churches.
Right. Well, and you know, I think my biggest connection to this book and the I really want to get across is the fact that, like, oftentimes people feel their prayers aren't answered, so they just stop praying. When in fact, if I look back on the moments, it literally came down to me making decisions, whether I should have moved forward, whether I should have taken a right turn instead of a left turn, and all those moments where I had that I knew it feeling, you know, it's like, I knew I should have done this. I knew I should have trusted my intuition. That is a form of answered prayer. So the book really is just my journey of going through the process.
Mm-hmm.
It turns into self-love, how you have to go within yourself and really experience knowing who you are, and in there is where you find your source energy or God or whatever people would love to call that. And you can't really do that without going. Everything is really self-love. Like you said, that's among the chapters too. I love that because I, you know, at my age, I'm still trying to figure out how to fully embrace myself. But I think the prayer process, you have to remember it's a two-way street. And that is just something I had to recognize and something I think I just needed to write about.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was thinking about taking this call for a moment, seeing who's on the line here. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
Okay, let's see. Your phone's cutting out just a little bit, too. I don't know. We're getting every other word here and there. So hold on. Let me see who's on the line. Hello, this is the Best Ever You Show. Would you like to ask Susie a question? They're silent. People shy up like that. They just like to listen. So I don't know. There is somebody listening the whole time. So I guess they could have said, no, thanks. All right. We'll move on. That's what happens sometimes with the callers. So let's go. Let's shift gears just a little bit, and let's talk about this husband of yours. You've been married for 11 years, and
yes,
you have four doggies.
We're down to three, unfortunately.
Oh.
We had to put one of them down about 3 weeks ago. No, it's okay. I still tell people I have four. We have stray animals. We find them on the streets. Literally all of our pets have come off the street. Either they found us in parking lots or we found them in parking lots. But they are our babies since we were not blessed with children. We have had an abundant source of animals, so we've got, there's always, you know, a house full of dogs that they range anywhere from 6 pounds to 8 pounds and anywhere in between, but we always seem to have four dogs, but my husband is a very, very kind soul, a very gentle soul, which I absolutely love, and he and I have just embraced the fact that, you know, our children will always be our animals, so.
Yeah. Now, did you where did you guys meet? And you know, those types of questions, so people kind of get to know you know, who you are in that regard too. Just
okay.
I love to hear married stories anyway. It's very fun to hear where you met. Where did you guys meet?
Well, it's interesting because my husband and I have actually been together for about 13 years. We started dating about 13 years ago, and we met through a mutual friend on Super Bowl Sunday. So every Super Bowl Sunday has always been wonderful for me because obviously it celebrates the love of my absolute soulmate, and he is. He's a wonderful person, and he just makes me want to be a better person. But we met through a mutual friend, and the story is kind of interesting because our friend ended up getting a little bit intoxicated during his party and got silly. And one of my girlfriends and I were laying on a hammock, and he started swinging it really hard, and the hammock snapped and broke, and she fell on top of me, and I kind of hurt my tailbone. So Jason, my husband, ended up driving me home, and that's how we got to know each other. And yeah, it's funny because people ask, how did you meet? And it's like, well, it's kind of an odd little story. But but he, you know, he proposed on Super Bowl Sunday, and every year we celebrate Super Bowl. You know, it always makes it better when the Packers are playing because that's his team.
The
but,
Packers? Is that what you just said? Oh, no, I'm a huge Vikings fan.
But no, he's an amazing person, and we'll be celebrating our 11 years on June 5th coming up.
Good. Well, congratulations.
And, you know, thank you. He's, you know, Elizabeth, he's been such a support. He's the one who has taught me not to be afraid of things and to face my fears and you know, what's the worst that can happen. So there's no doubt that without his encouragement, I would probably have not written the book. And had I finished it, it probably would have stayed tucked in the closet somewhere. You know, so he has been an amazing source of inspiration and support and just absolutely the light of my life. I could talk the whole hour about my husband. He's wonderful.
Yeah, I could do a show on mine too. He's just cool. I don't know. Just a great supporter. It's neat when you're married to somebody like that who just supports your every dream and goal and pretty much thought too. It's kind of cool.
It is. Yeah. And it makes you realize how blessed you are because, you know, those gems are sometimes hard to find.
Yeah. Yep, kissed a few frogs to find them. definitely. Okay, so let's go back to your book and website. I just want to remind people who are just joining us that we're speaking with Susie Booth, who is an author, a jewelry designer, and a wonderful coach, kind of a life coach and a pageant coach. And you can follow along with us by calling, well, you're probably already with us. Let's go to her website. You can go to susieboots.com, or you can chat with us live, too. We do have the chat window open at this point, and so if you have a question, you can write it in there, too. So let's go back to your book for a minute again and just talk about what about fear and competition?
That's a great chapter.
Yeah, I love this one.
And it's interesting because the fear and the competition, obviously being a pageant coach and a former competitor, it's, you know, a lot of people don't understand the process of competing. I tell my queens every single day that pageantry is a me, myself, and I sport. And if you think about it, anything in life that you try to accomplish really does come down to you competing against yourself. And what I learned most when I wrote this chapter is the fact that when we get in fear of either trying to understand who we are and trying to recognize the gifts that we have and tweak them a little bit in order to attain what it is we're trying to attain, we think that something is coming from outside of ourselves, when in fact a lot of the journey, especially through pageantry, is about progressing from point A to point B in your life, and the pageant is just a part of that journey. Obviously, as a pageant coach, I tell girls every day, yes, there are 50-some other contestants that you are competing with, but if you really think about it, your biggest competition has to come from refining those gifts that you have and really working on overcoming those fears. And it can be fears of not being good enough or not thinking you're good enough, fears of, you know, I can't tell you how many girls I speak to every day who think that they're not tall enough, when my biggest issue in junior high was the fact that I was ridiculously tall, taller than all the boys. So we always find something that we can be in fear of unless we learn to really embrace it and say, okay, this is who I am. This is who I'm supposed to be. And if my calling is through this competition, whether it's in basketball, whether it's in pageantry, anything, really overcome, use that journey to overcome those fears. So at the end of the journey, you realize you've already created another one, and it, the pageant or the competition was just a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really important also because, you know, a lot of people who might who are listening might not be in pageants, and I think it's important to, you know, show that on all levels of whatever it is you're doing in life. You know, and in a pageant sense, if you, like, for example, if I show up in Chicago and I think this is some big competition against me and, what is it, 55 other girls, you know, what a nightmare for me. To think that way,
exactly.
And I don't think about. I said to you when we very first started, I don't really want to compete against other women. That's not my MO at all, you know. But promoting,
exactly.
You know. So in life, how do you reiterate that again? That point, because I think it's so important. Because even my son walking through the door from high school baseball is like, you know, I'm not playing enough. I'm not as good as blah blah blah, and I'm like, oh, stop right there.
Right.
Yeah, no, Connor, you know, you can't say something like that about yourself. It's not a fair comparison.
Exactly. And if you really think about it, anything you do in life is really about developing your own skills. And the most difficult part of any competition is, and I used to run track, is really having to, again, go within and create that discipline to find those weaknesses and strengthen those and to really maximize the gifts that you have. And don't look outside of yourself for something that you can already provide for within yourself. And as silly as that sounds, we do go through any kind of a competition basing our self-worth on the outcome of it. And I think one of the biggest things I can coach my contestants, whether they're in pageantry or whether it's just life coaching, is you ultimately hold that key as to how you're going to feel about yourself. You can go through any kind of a competition, win the top prize, and if you still haven't created that journey about self-improvement and self-acceptance, then that medal doesn't mean anything. You still haven't gotten there. So
yeah.
Anything you compete, you have to really find that within yourself and create it to know that that ability is already within yourself and that approval is just yours ultimately to give to yourself.
Yeah, I love that too. If, you know, for example, if I was headed to Chicago seeking some approval, like for somebody to say, oh my gosh, we're going to put this crown on your head and now everybody approves of you, that's not the right thing to be thinking.
Right, and it also isn't what happens, trust
That's
me.
That's not healthy. Yeah, exactly. It's not, but, I mean, I think a lot of people determine their self-worth by, how you know, by the degree, you know, the little initials behind their name or the medals they've won or the things that they've achieved or anything like this, and I don't know that that's exactly what defines you as a human being.
I agree 100%. And the correlation between the fear and the competition is the fact that if you approach competition from the eyes of fear, then you've already put yourself in an inferior position.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't really matter what anybody outside of yourself is doing. It what creates your worth and your competitive spirit and your competitive edge in anything is how you refine what you have. Not by changing it to become somebody else, but by taking those unique gifts that you have and making them as tangible and as wonderful as you can by just, you know, expressing yourself, sharing who you are. I always say my goal with anybody I work with is to take those things that they were always nervous about in high school or that people made fun of them and tweak that so that becomes something different that sets them apart from everybody else. So just look at what your biggest fears are in any competition, whether it's in job, and realize there's nobody you're competing with other than yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other thing, too, that's always interesting about any type of competition, again, not just a pageant, but, you know, it could be a track meet or whatever, is that everybody's just as nervous as you are, generally speaking. It's really interesting, and all of the different dynamics that come out when somebody is nervous, there are so many different ways to behave when you're nervous. Some people get quiet, some people get mean, some people get funny, there's all these different personalities that come out. Do you have any words of wisdom regarding that for people? Because I do know definitely there are some people listening who are, you know, going to take from this phone call a lot about how to behave in competition mode, whether it's a pageant or a job interview.
Absolutely. Honestly, in anything, especially with competition, you have to look at it through, and I know it sounds silly, but I really believe through the eyes of love or through the eyes of fear. And if you are afraid of something coming up that you're competing, whether it's a group of contestants, whether it's three other people you're trying to compete against to get a promotion,
Acting is a big one.
Yeah,
acting is huge because.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to add in there before you finish because I wanted to. There's a lot of actors listening, and actors get depressed when they don't get parts.
Right.
Real common.
Well, and it's about the perception. If you really think about it, what it is that you are. First, you have to identify what your greatest fear is. You have to, because, like you said, one way or the other, you will react to it. And when I work with people, I tell them, I need to know what your greatest strengths are, and they will give me a list of those. Then I want to know what your biggest fears are. And when they hear the word fear, they're like, well, I'm afraid of not winning. And I want to hear, why are you afraid of not winning? Because if you have a fear that you have not identified, you are going to react in some way, shape, or form. Oftentimes, you will say something at the last minute that completely jeopardizes your ability to get it. And how many times do we go into interviews, and right when we're ready to walk out, we just say something and think, oh, my gosh, did that just come out of my mouth? But like you said, your body, you will react somehow. And oftentimes, fear does come out in anger because you're either thinking you have to try to beat the other person down, whether it's malicious competition or whether it's just your words or your attitude. But by doing that, I always say, as silly as it sounds, you always know the person who is most insecure in any competition by how they treat other people. If they treat other people well, they're very secure with themselves. If they're really not nice to other people in any kind, we know whether it's children up to adults, then that is the person, and that's a cue to tell you they have a lot of fears that they really have not
addressed.
Approached. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. We're at pretty much at the halfway point, and I want to come back to the book again, take a break from the book again and go back to jewelry for a little bit because I love your jewelry. And this one definitely is at SusieBoots.com. There's some jewelry that you've designed recently that is landing on celebrities.
Yes.
You must be really, really tickled about that.
I am absolutely thrilled. And it with again, a lot of things in my life, if I just take that chance and have the leap of faith, the doors kind of swing open. And I'm sure you can, and every single listener can look back at their life and think, wow, that is actually true. I had the opportunity to be invited to the Super Bowl, a celebrity gifting event, and I got to meet some amazing celebrities, and quite a few of them took my jewelry pieces. But the first one who I was so proud of, who wore my piece, was Juliana Rancic from E! News Television, and that was about a year and a half ago. So I've had the opportunity to get some beautiful women wearing my jewelry, and Sofia Vergara from Modern Family was one of them. And, you know, it's really exciting because it's something I created with my own hands and somebody else appreciates. So I know it sounds silly, but to have somebody else appreciate something you do is just the greatest compliment you can receive.
Yeah, no, I completely get it. Where does your jewelry, where do the designs come from? Where do you get inspiration from?
I find inspiration from a lot of the textures around me, whether they're just from nature or if I see a mixture of colors from a piece of material. But oftentimes, I'm not the kind of designer that can sit down and sketch something out. I literally have to sit down and see which stones call to me and just take them at that point and just start designing them. I don't know if it's a more difficult process. It probably is, but that's how I design, and it just has to feel right. If it's something I would wear, then then it goes out. If it's not something I would wear, then it gets redone. And there's a lot of redo.
Yeah. What's your goal with your jewelry? Have you achieved what you've been trying to achieve, or are there more things that you dream to be doing?
No, my ultimate goal is to be able to have my jewelry in a boutique, but ultimately in a Neiman Marcus, to be perfectly honest. So if anyone has connections to Neiman's, call me. But I
so more of like a retail type thing,
yes,
where you have your own line?
Yes,
me.
Definitely. Yeah, that's my goal. I've got big aspirations, so we'll see how it goes.
No, but what I like about, we're similar in that we are very vocal about our dreams and goals. And I believe that when you're very vocal about your dreams and goals, somebody hears them and they connect you, and it helps you.
Yeah.
Because otherwise nobody ever knows what you're thinking.
That is so true.
Yeah, and I'm not afraid of it anymore. I really used to be afraid to say, I want to own a multimedia company that goes all across the globe and blah, 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 you know, and all the things I think about with Best Ever You. And I finally started almost screaming it because I know, you know what I mean? Because the more you talk about it, the more people hear you and they make it happen for you. Because there's no way, there's no way I'm just going to be able to sit here and things are going to be able to happen. People have to help you.
Right. That is so true. That is so true. And people really do come from a place of contribution. I mean, I've learned that just with the people I've met in my life.
Yeah.
People will do a lot to help another person. And somebody told me once, and this really stuck, that if there's something you want to do, start doing it and tell everybody that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
So when I wanted to write my book, you know, my biggest fear was saying I'm going to be a writer, because what if somebody thought, well, then where's your book? Or read it and thought it absolutely stunk. But I wanted to become a writer, and I finally stopped making excuses why I could not do it. And when I did it, I started telling everyone, I'm writing a book. But it's true, because people like you will come into my life and say, guess what, I would love to help you and talk about it. So you are absolutely true.
But some people will come, you know, there's good and bad. You have to weed through it.
Yes.
I mean, I've been burned a few times in business. There's some dead bodies along the way, definitely. but in general, once you're a little bit more vocal and you're not afraid of what anybody thinks about you, because I used to be afraid that people were going to be like, oh, my gosh, her? Why? You know, or whatever. You know, you can't do that. And I've had people say that to me, like, get a real job or whatever. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to. So
right.
I guess it's not going to be you next. And, you know, you just go through people a little bit. But yeah.
You bring
whatever.
Up something, such a good point. And the fact is, I always tell people I work with, be very, very cautious who you share your dreams with, because there are so many people who are still trying to discover themselves and are still in that place of fear, where in their world it's not achievable. I can't tell you how many people told me that I should hang up my pageant heels and get a life. Literally, those were the words. And had I done that, I would not have won my first national in 2000 when I won Miss U.S. Continental, and I definitely would not have won Mrs. International, because there are a lot of people who will judge you by how they perceive their own limitations to be, and there's a lot of people who are still not strong enough and secure enough in who they are who will adopt those fears. And how many dreams and how many people do you know who have tucked their dreams in the closet and are just waiting for the right moment or the right person to come along, but ultimately it has to start with yourself. So you are absolutely right. You have to be cautious, too, of who you share those with.
Yeah, Yeah, to some extent. Yeah, I call. I have a catch name for them. It's a dream, little dream killer.
Yeah.
I have a more pointed name, but I've learned over the past, you know, almost 4 years now of who's going with me and who's not. And you get to a point, you get a real knack for it. You can tell who's supportive and who's not. And there really is a. I think sometimes people are unable to help, like you've said, kind of unable to help you because they're just not there yet in their own life, or something they've done didn't succeed, so why should you? And you know, there's a lot of people in the world. So I always say there's plenty of room in the world for people to move the dream forward.
Yeah,
I really
that's
do.
Great
just,
advice.
You have to find them and stuff, but yeah. Okay, so I think that's neat. We do have a question. Somebody from Wyoming is asking, very interesting, hello. hello, Wyoming. I'm just going to read the question. They wanted to know, you're from Texas, why Wyoming?
I am actually, I was raised in Wyoming. I'm originally from Puerto Rico and was raised in Wyoming, went to the University of Wyoming, and then after I graduated, came to Texas. So every state I go to, I seem to be a cowgirl through and through. So, that's how I ended up, that's how this Wyoming girl ended up in Texas.
In Texas, okay, I get it. Yeah, well, they had it wrong then. No, I'm just kidding. So Texas. So the other way. So you're not from Texas and you went to Wyoming. Where did you say you're from? You're from Puerto Rico?
No, I'm originally from Puerto Rico. And when my mom had remarried my stepdad, we moved to Wyoming, and that's where I was raised. And then after I graduated, I stayed in Wyoming through all my schooling, including my college. And then after I graduated, I came to Texas.
How neat is that? I've never been to that state. What's Wyoming like?
It's cold.
Is it colder than Maine? I don't know.
I don't know. It's probably colder in Maine, but Wyoming is cold. That's why I'm in Texas. It's cold there.
Yeah. All right. Wyoming, it's cold there. I like that. That should be the new state slogan. It's cold here.
It's cold.
Like that.
No, it's got, it's a beautiful state. It's got the Rocky Mountains. It's got great skiing if you love to ski. But my ability on snow is pretty much to just slip and fall. So
I'm... So you're not a good skier either, huh?
No, ma'am. I love the warm weather.
I love the look of mountains and the snow on the mountains, but actually going down a mountain, wow. That is just, I've tried it once. And I will never do it again. I went to a bunny class, you know, like the bunny hill class, you know, the beginner thing. It's like probably maybe 3 years ago. And the guy got done with the class. My kids were like skiing circles around me, and my husband's chuckling. And the guy said, "I can't take you up on the mountain. You've got to stay down here. You're terrible." I don't know. Some people are skiers and some aren't. And you need a lot of work. You'll get hurt if we take you up on the slopes. And I'm just like, okay, I'll go in the lodge. Oh, funny. My dreams of being a skier were smashed. No. So let's go back to the book again, because I just love this book. Again, Through the Eyes of Truth, and you can order it directly through Susie's website at susieboots.com. And it's a good 380-page read or so, and it's got about 18 chapters. And I just love this book because it is just, it's lovely. It's just completely positive. When you read it, you feel like you can, you know, then do anything. And that's what the type of book is supposed to do, yeah. Let's talk about money. The illusion of money.
That was an interesting chapter. And again, it goes back to, and I had put illusion because, again, so many people do not really understand what makes them truly happy because they have not gone within to discover that. And how many people do you talk to who say, you know, once I had enough money or if I just had enough money to do this and this and this, I would never want again. I'd be happy. It would take care of everything. But money is not obviously the answer. I mean, I'll admit it's, you know, everybody, I think, deserves to have wealth, period, because we're all children of source energy of God, and you know what? There's no reason anyone should be in lack. But you have to understand that money is just a physical energy. It's not going to replace what it is you are trying to and you need to accomplish from within yourself.
Yeah.
So the chapter on the illusion of money really discusses the fact that so many people think that once they have money, everything will be solved for them, when in fact, oftentimes money is used to perpetuate more fear, to perpetuate more anger. You know, I mean, look, turn on the news and look at the world around, and there's a lot of instances where that's happened.
Yeah, a lot of people think if they have another thing or a new car or a bigger house or a new house, everything will be fine. And it's funny, as I get a little bit older, I sometimes think money causes even more problems. Or if you raise your standard of living, everything raises with it. All of the chaos comes with too. I can't tell you how many times we've thought maybe about downsizing.
Right. And that's
taking
why
our life
so many
and just going
do.
In half. Mm-hmm. What did you say?
No, that's why so many people ultimately do. And again, because I think oftentimes, and with, I really believe what's perpetuated so much of the economy, it's the fact that people are looking outside of themselves to fulfill what they should be reaching for within themselves. And like you said, getting the bigger houses so they feel like they're as important as their neighbor, getting the nice car so other people might perceive them as being more successful. When in all honesty, if you think about it, each and every one of us are really just trying to struggle on how to get through our own lives instead of worrying about, you know, the fact that Frank down the street has a new BMW. That's wonderful. But everybody is so worried about trying to impress other people and trying to look outside of themselves for something that they can create within themselves that they lose the focus. There has to be a balance. You first have to know what makes you happy, what you desire, what your gifts can bring, and then from there, you know, buy the beautiful things, but be sure that it's not replacing what it is that you provide yourself internally.
How did you learn all this? Were you born this way, or how did you learn? I think a lot of people get to a certain age, you know, maybe it's 35 or in their 30s or 40s, and they kind of suddenly become a little bit more wise. Do you feel that way? And at age 28, that you are.
Oh, I love you. Well, like you said, with age does come wisdom, and being at my ripe age of 46, I've learned a little bit. But to be honest, I was always that nerdy kid who, when I read books, it was books on spirituality. And I was somebody, I'd look back through my report cards when I was a little girl, and it was always, teachers were asking, why does she ask so many questions? Everything is why? And I really come from wanting to understand why people think and how they think that way. So honestly, a lot of it has been taught through watching lives of people around me and really trying to understand it. And I guess in a sense, just kind of being born a little freaky to where it's just something that I absolutely love to do.
Did you ever think about becoming a therapist with some of the gifts that you have or anything like that, or was it always passion?
When I started college, I wanted to get my degree in psychology. I wanted to be a psychologist.
Yeah.
That was what my ultimate goal was. And I loved fashion as well. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to go into fashion. And now it's funny because a lot of my queens tell me that I'm their pageant psychologist, because I really ultimately, just like you, I just want to leave somebody, anybody, with something better about themselves. You know, let them realize that there's something about themselves and something within themselves that maybe they didn't recognize 10 minutes before they met me that, you know, is a gift, and it might lead them into looking within themselves a little bit more and recognizing more of those gifts.
Yeah. Now, how do you teach somebody this? Here's a question for you. And this one's very specific about pageants, because you mentioned pageants again. How do you teach somebody in this competition coming up that I want to teach, for example, I just so badly want to teach this lesson to everyone, there's not one human being there that's better than another just because somebody wins. There's
right.
so many gifts there. How do you, in a 5-day event, how do the pageant embrace each other's gifts? Does most of that happen after? Because everybody's in competition mode. It's so frustrating to me because I just want to go there and like interview everybody. It's the funnest
right.
thing. If I could put each one of them on the radio.
Do.
I do. You
right.
know, it's my personality. I don't
yeah.
want to go there and like compete like in a sense of like that. I'd much rather sit and have a room full of girls and roast marshmallows and hear about them. That's my thing, you know. How do you teach somebody
else? Well,
it's
because
else,
that's
though?
Who you are. That's what your gift is. That's what your contribution is to recognize other people. And what I always, my goal when I coach, especially for pageantry, it really is to coach from the inside out. First, you really have to know what you're doing and why you're doing it. And
mm-hmm.
go beyond the superficial world peace, and I want to make a difference. Of course you do, but there's so many people outside of pageantry who want to make a difference and who do it each and every day. So mm-hmm. what my goal is to help you discover what absolute deciding factors that you are doing this for. If it's to, you know, like you said, to interview somebody, if it's really to help one person get a mammogram so they can have early detection, so they can know that their family is going to be with them for another 20 years,
mm-hmm.
really figure out what your why is. You have to know your why. And from that point, you go in there with that point of contribution. I tell all of my queens, you have to know what your contribution is. So from the second you get off that plane, wherever you're competing and you meet these young women, you know that you're coming from a place of contribution. I can't tell you how many contestants I asked to see or had double-checked to be sure they had their mammograms, how many contestants' moms have had their mammograms. Everybody I talked to was about trying to get their mammograms, becoming more aware of breast cancer and early detection, and ultimately helping them find something about themselves that sometimes we forget in the journey of competition. So when that really does help, because just as a competitor, when I competed in any of the pageants that I competed in, the ones I did the best were the ones where I was coming from a place of wanting to leave something behind, something greater than before I walked into that room. Because in all honesty, one person walks away with that crown, and you still have to know that you're going to walk away with something great, even if you
mm-hmm.
don't win the crown.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to say also is that you've written something on this before, and I can't remember where I saw it, but it was so relevant, especially to pageants or really any competition. I took away from it anything, whether it's a job interview or like we keep saying, a track meet or a pageant. It just doesn't matter. Whoever really wins, it doesn't mean that you're a complete failure.
Right.
And so
Absolutely.
Many people, I see so many people, it's like the dance of the walking wounded, that they think that something's wrong with them because they didn't get that job or win that track meet or win that pageant or, you know, it's like, well, why didn't I win? And it's like, oh,
right.
boy. How do you address that?
Well, and pageants are a tough thing because, let's face it, whether it's interview platform-based or swimsuit, they're ultimately pageantry. You're being judged on the physicality and also on the interior of the package. So ultimately, whether I work with anybody or not, if I could give the greatest advice on competing, it's to first find out what gifts you want to bring to the table, which means you have to know who you are and what those gifts are. So by the time you get to that pageant or that competition, you've already looked beyond it. And that's how
yeah.
I coach every one of my queens. I find out what it is ultimately they want in life. I can't ask you how many people, or I can't tell you how many people a day I'll see and say, what do you want to become when you grow up? Because if it's in pageantry, then pageantry is just a journey to get there. It doesn't mean anyone is better than you. It doesn't mean anyone's more attractive than you. It just means that that person at that time was meant to get that job because, you know, as much as I love to preach about it, it goes back to when you've made your contract with God. You know, it
yeah.
doesn't mean that anybody else there isn't worthy. It just means that 49 or 50 other angels came and helped you celebrate it, and in turn are going to get their own gifts too, because you cannot put that kind of energy forward and send it out there without having it come back to you tenfold. So if it's not a pageant, I guarantee you it's going to be something that you're going to get that's probably greater than what you thought it would be. I mean, look at Halle Berry. You know, how many people can say who even won that pageant that year? Look at women, you know, men across everywhere, every walk of life that thought they were inadequate or were not good enough when they did not receive something, and then look back a year later and think, I'm so glad I did not get that, because had I, this may not have come through. So it's always about looking at the bigger picture, going beyond the pageant stage, going beyond that promotion, and really identifying what it is that you want, and then move forward from there and get it.
Yeah, that's very good advice. All right, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I'm really curious, is there anything that I haven't asked you? I always ask this of every guest. Is there anything I have not touched on, completely missed, or anything like that, or something that you would like to go back and talk about?
Well, I briefly touched on it with the mammograms. Of course, I'm going to be preaching now just to be sure that everybody does need to get their annual mammograms and practice early detection, because with breast cancer, you know, as so many people know, and you speaking to so many people, cancer is a very silent killer. But honestly, I have had the time of my life getting to write this book, and in all honesty, was my biggest fear. So what I encourage people to do is find out what that biggest fear is, and it's usually something that you think about and you dream about, and then as soon as you snap out of it, you know, reality comes back in, you're feeding the kids, you're chasing the dogs, and you put that dream away. You know, pull that out of the back of your closet, pull it out of the cobwebs that you've tucked it into and that little treasure chest in your mind, and start doing it, because you just never know where it's going to take you. Just the fact that I finished this book is one of my greatest accomplishments. Whether anybody had been able to read it or not, I got to finish it. So I always tell people, if I'm going to leave with a place of contribution, you know, find out what that is. Write it out and do it, because the only person who's judging you is yourself.
Yeah. Yep. I completely agree there too. Definitely. Do you have other things that you want to do? Okay, so you've written a book, and you've done jewelry, and you've won Mrs. International. What's next for you? What do you think about doing, maybe 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? What's next?
I would absolutely love to have my own, like a spiritual center, somewhere where I can help especially young girls have a camp and be able to teach them self-esteem. I remember when I was younger, I mean, you know, if you saw pictures of me, Elizabeth, you would say this is warranted, but I was a pretty gawky kid, and I felt like I was a gawky
I can join that club, too. We all were. It was a product of the 80s.
Are.
My goodness, kids were laughing at me. My own kids were like, Mom, look at your hair. But yeah,
I know.
The
pictures that never die. But ultimately, I would say I want to continue writing books, but I really do want to have a spiritual center or a retreat where people and teens can come and really, instead of, you know, trying to build self-esteem from peer pressure and falling into the wrong opportunities and the wrong choices, being able to be led, because oftentimes our parents do the best they can, but if they're suffering self-esteem too, unfortunately those self-imposed limitations get handed down generation to generation. So in a perfect world, I still want to be an educational resource, and I want to be able to help younger people and help mold them to where at a younger age they're able to see more in themselves and make better life choices, and to teach their daughters and their sons that they can have anything and achieve anything they want. I mean, one of the greatest gifts that I get to do each and every day is work with people and tell them, you know, you can become anything you want to, and be able to work with 15-year-old girls who really grasp that and understand that. And I look and I think, if I only had that kind of confidence at their age, you know, what would I have done by now? So ultimately, I want to be able to help. I think there needs to be more Oprah Winfreys out there, people who, like you, use the power of the voice and the media to help inspire and recognize and encourage. And that's ultimately what I want to do through my work.
Yeah, I think we're I think we're in the midst of a culture shift with women too. I think that the people who were 40 are now 60, and those women who are in their 60s right now are saying, "Hey, it's not about beauty. It's about what you say and what you do and how you treat people. And here's some tricks along the way to do this and that." But you know, my mom's a great example of that. You know, she's 60. She's 66, almost 66, and she, you know, she was a model. She was a this, she was a that, and probably about 20. I mean, she's five. I don't know how she used to model for Coca-Cola. I mean, she used to do all these different things.
Wow.
And you know, she's pretty smoking hot for 66 years old still. You know, she's gorgeous, but she says, you know, there's some insane pressure on girls to just, you know, there's no way your looks are going to stay all the way to 66. You know, you're gonna change and grow, and you know, just all the different things. And she's really taught me that it's really important. Our whole life, she's always taught us to give back, to always, always, always give back and treat people kindly and do nice things and think about other people more than yourself. And I think that's what makes you pretty as you get older.
I agree. You know what, Elizabeth, is what makes you pretty when you're young, because how many women or men you run into at any age who you think they're very, very attractive, and the minute they open their mouth, you're thinking, wow.
Yeah.
And
I
not,
do that
you know,
a lot.
Beauty really, yes, beauty comes from within. That is such a cliche, but that's what needs to be encouraged in school. You know, that's what needs to be encouraged in society, because it's about coming from a place of contribution, because it doesn't matter what title you won. It doesn't matter how many covers and magazines you're on. There's always going to be someone who's prettier, taller, thinner, you name
whatever.
It. There will always be somebody. But if you can leave somebody with a feeling about themselves that makes them feel beautiful at any age, then you've really shared what beauty is. You've shared what your beauty is, and you've shared that with them so they can inspire someone else to feel beautiful, because ultimately it's about the experience.
Saying, I don't really, you know, anybody can be prettier, cuter, nicer, or not nicer, but prettier, cuter, taller, thinner, whatever, but I want to find somebody who's nicer than me.
Yeah.
That's my goal. You know what I mean? I always am like, that's, I want to out-nice people, because I really believe in being nice and being kind to other people and treating people with respect, and I know you do too. And this book is just great. And we've got about 2 minutes left, so I want to go back to your book and just tell everybody to please visit your website, which is susieboots.com, and buy her book. It's such a great book. It's Through the Eyes of Truth, and we've had two people read it now in our household, and I'm going to pass it on to others. But it's, you know, it's a longer book, so you need to take some time to read it. And, you know, really, it's an eye opener and a heart opener. It's just a neat, it's a neat book. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
And, and you're going to be opening up centers. What else are we going to be doing? We're going to be having our own jewelry line in Neiman Marcus.
And I want to continue just helping women. You know, I tell my husband every day, I want to be the new Oprah. I want to be the one who inspires the world. I don't know how, but I'll figure it out.
I have an idea for you. So we'll talk offline. But all right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And caller 780, thanks for listening the whole time. They never did ask their question, but we had somebody hang on. Your every word, apparently. <It's funny. laughs> So please, when we're done with the call, please. I don't know. But please go to beynetwork.com and join our new community. We've got a lot going on in that community. It just opened up yesterday or the day before, 2 days ago, whatever. Lots of activity going on there. And we'll follow up in the community with kind of an article on Susie and this radio broadcast, so you can forward it to people or like it on Facebook or like it on Twitter, and also go to besteveryou.com. We'll follow up there as well. And, you know, one more plug for Susie, susieboots.com, and her book, Through the Eyes of Truth. And we will see you in Chicago, Susie Boots. We love you, we love you. And, I'm just so proud of you. So you keep doing all the cool things that you do.
Thank you.
There's
you
a joy. All right, have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.